Welcome back. I'm Ian Masterson. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Craig Stanford, who is a well-known authority on the behavior of primates and other animals and on the biological and cultural roots of human behavior. He's a professor of anthropology and biological sciences at USC and director of the USC Jane Goodall Research Center. He's also the author of a new book, Planet Without Apes. Welcome to Background Briefing.
Thank you, Ian.
Craig Stanford. Now, Planet Without Apes, the idea that our addiction to cell phones and electronics is causing or contributing to the extinction of these noble creatures, the great apes, our closest relatives in the animal kingdom. Give me a sense of how that case is made.
Well, you know, my view as an ecologist is that we're living in the 21st century in the great bottleneck in terms of ecosystems. So in the 19th century, North America, the U.S. and Canada went through the same bottleneck. We nearly lost all of our wildlife, the big animals, the bison, the wolf, the grizzly. We managed to save them by the skin of their teeth. And into the 20th and 21st century, we've managed to set up sustainable long-term plans for their survival. So the developing world is in the same situation now for many of their majestic animals. And my own work for many, many years has been with the great apes, the gorilla, the chimpanzee, bonobo, and orangutan. And so in Africa, you have a situation now where you have rapid deforestation, people eating great apes as part of their diet for the table.
Is that
every
what they
day.
Call bush meat?
The bush meat crisis, exactly, is what refers to. It's actually a term that Americans, for whatever reason, have never really picked up on. That most audiences I speak to in the U.S., people still don't know that word bush meat. People in Europe tend to be more familiar with it. It's actually derived from the French translation of it. And it simply refers to the fact that people in some parts of the world still eat wild animals as a source of protein. And in Africa, that's been going on for thousands of years. It's sustainable. It had been sustainable. It's not sustainable in the 21st century because it's become industrialized. It's become a commercial industry. It's become a global smuggling network in which the meat of great apes is taken and it's smuggled out of the forest where they live, usually via logging trucks and whatnot. It ends up in towns and cities where it's sold at enormous prices, 10 times the cost of beef. And from there it goes onto a global smuggling route that takes it to Paris, London, Brussels, and even to New York City.
And I've seen footage of, I guess they're from the Congo, I think it was, or maybe Rwanda, going deep into the jungle and cornering gorillas.
Right.
And killing them. I mean, it's hard to believe right. that a group of men can do right. this, but they do. And you hear this beautiful creature screaming. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not an aggressive animal to begin right, with, right. my understanding.
Right. No,
and apparently is it for bush meat? Is that why they're killing gorillas?
Yeah, people have been doing that. I mean, it sounds gruesome and awful. It's been done for thousands of years. And it was actually sustainable mm-hmm. for a long time because it was mainly a man going out with a spear trying to find some food for his children to eat. Mm-hmm. And it's dangerous because you can easily be killed by a large silverback gorilla. It's a very peaceful animal, but when provoked, or when the members of his group are provoked, he can be deadly.
Oh, sure.
He weighs 400 pounds. So that was actually sustainable. It was a difficult thing to do. It didn't happen very often. But the advent of guns changed the equation. And then the advent of large-scale logging operations where trucks would go deep into the forest to carry timber out. And those became pipelines, those logging roads, for the commercial trade in the meat. So it's no longer a local practice. As a local practice, it really is sustainable. And there's a lot of, you know, I think there's a lot of kind of tinge with racism feeling about what goes on in places like Africa. We feel like, oh, they just don't know what they're doing in terms of protecting their natural heritage. And we forget that it was a century ago that we did exactly the same thing in North America. So we have to work with these cultures. We try to change their dietary tastes away from these delicacies, and it really is a delicacy. For many African societies, West and Central Africa, eating a gorilla is comparable to us wanting lobster caviar. You serve it to your guests at a fancy dinner party. You serve it at a banquet. So it's a difficult cultural practice to change. It'd be like telling Americans no more turkey on Thanksgiving. And so we work with that. We have a lot of grassroots programs across Africa working on this problem, but it is a difficult problem. And the biggest the biggest problem with it is not only the large-scale hunting, but the fact that these animals reproduce very, very slowly, more slowly than we do. So they cannot sustain that level of hunting.
And again, I'm speaking with Craig Stanford, who is the co-director of the Jane Goodall Research Center at USC, and his latest book is Planet Without Apes. So let's talk about coltan, the very vital mineral that's used in a lot of electronics. And I don't think you can talk about this without talking about the kind of domino of wars that have gone on, starting with the Rwanda genocide against where the Hutu killed the Tutsis. The Tutsis reinvaded, drove the Hutu into the Congo, and ever since then you've had that entire region destabilized, and you've got this warlord Joseph Kony mixed in with it. So you have all of this this mayhem going on, but it must impact the wildlife. You got all these guys in the jungle with AK-47s.
Right. Yeah. Tragically, the last remaining population of some of the eastern gorillas are right smack in the middle of all this chaos that goes on in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. And coltan, as you mentioned, which is a nickname for an ore that's properly called columbite tantalite, is essentially a conflict mineral caught up in all of this. It's an ore that is used in your miniaturized electronic device, like your smartphone. Anybody walking around with a smartphone, which we all are now, is carrying some of this material with them, and we're kind of subsidizing this entire industry. 80% of the world's coltan supply is mined in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The mining itself is very destructive to the ecosystem. It very much resembles California gold rush mining of rivers and streams. It basically destroys those ecosystems. The camps of the miners, who were basically regarded as slave labor, bring their own problems, everything from disease, prostitution, and so forth. And as you mentioned, this material then is a conflict mineral, not quite as valuable as gold or diamonds, but nevertheless you have generals from the neighboring countries around Congo acting as warlords. They want to be there. They want to be mining this coltan. It's very valuable, and its sale enables them to buy more weapons. It lines their pockets. So it's a very destructive, kind of vicious cycle, and the guerrillas are caught right in the middle of it.
So we've heard about blood diamonds and efforts to stigmatize blood diamonds, the very nature of that term does. So what about efforts to stigmatize coltan and make the American consumers who addicted to their iPhones realize that there's blood on the hands of this mineral? That
would be great. And the difficulty is that other than recycling your phone when you're done with it, which we all should do, it's hard to know what the average consumer can do to make an impact other than raising awareness. When PlayStation 3 was released, the global price of coltan doubled overnight. So this is an ore, it's not as valuable as diamonds, but it's an ore that has significant global value. Most of it's sent to China, of course, for use in factories where they then ship the phones to us. But it's a difficult practice to change because it's a burgeoning, it's a booming economic engine in that part of the world, and it's a mostly illegal engine, and then it's not mined under the auspices of any particular body.
And again, I'm speaking with Craig Stanford, who is the co-director of the Jane Goodall Research Center at USC. And we're talking about his latest book, Planet Without Apes. We're live from the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books on the campus of the University of Southern California. So there's also the Ebola affecting. How do these diseases affect these endangered species?
Right, well, this is sort of ironic because Hollywood, of course, here we are sitting in LA, not far from Hollywood. Hollywood loves Ebola. They love, you know, the movie industry loves to make movies about these sort of plague level diseases, when the reality is that Ebola, the numerous outbreaks that have happened in human villages in Africa, have tended to kill a quite small number of people, and then they burn, and then the disease burns itself out, goes away. No one knows what we haven't nailed down what the vector is. We think that it may be bats, but we're not 100% sure of that. And then it goes away until it pops up again. But with respect to the great apes, for whatever reason, the epidemiology is different. And we know from censuses that 5,000 to 10,000 gorillas and chimps have died in the past 5 to 10 years, we find their carcasses all across the rainforest of Central Africa from Ebola. And so that's one of the great tragedies, that we all worry about it as a human plague, when in fact it primarily exists as a plague on these animals that number only in the thousands these days, when we number in the billions.
So, but one of the great apes that's endangered is the orangutan, and they're not in Africa, they're in Indonesia, are they now?
Correct, right.
Well, Borneo.
Right. In Southeast Asia, Sumatra and Borneo, yes, yeah. And so they're a different situation. What we've been saying up to now mainly applies to the African apes, the chimp, bonobo, and the gorilla. The orangutan's problem is that it lives in a country, Indonesia, that it's a developing country, but a rapidly developing country that has major natural resources that it is hell-bent to extract and use. So deforestation, destruction of the Indonesian rainforest is happening at an absolutely incredible pace. And the Indonesian government, although on the surface willing to work with global conservation community to in some way set aside land and protect the animals in that forest, they're pretty hell-bent on developing that forest. And most of the wood is going to either chopstick industry in the Far East. The land itself is then turned into palm plantations, because most of the world's palm oil, cooking oil, comes from Indonesia. And so it's turned into habitat that's absolutely useless to orangutans. There only are maybe 20,000, 15 to 20,000 orangutans left between Borneo and Sumatra. They cannot withstand any level of deforestation, and they reproduce more slowly than any of the other great apes. Maybe a female orangutan has a baby every 7 to 8 years. So they honestly can't withstand that level of deforestation. It's happening very rapidly. And I really wrote the book after many years of doing research on the great apes. I wrote the book because these problems are not, they're not in the category of, oh gee, if we don't do something in our grandchildren's lifetime, they won't be there. It's more like in our own lifetime, they won't be there.
And what are the figures of silverback gorillas, for example?
The mountain gorillas, maybe you're thinking of, exist in two tiny populations in East Central Africa, and the total is about 800 animals right now.
800?
Well, actually, 800 sounds like a terribly bleak number. It's actually growing rapidly because ecotourism, and maybe some listeners have been to Africa on safaris, and most African safari travelers want to include on their itinerary a visit to the mountain gorillas. It's a lifetime bucket list achievement. And as a result, those animals are worth more alive than dead now. And that's been a huge savior of the gorillas, because people now in the neighboring villages respect these animals, and they know that saving them, protecting them, will help them, in that a portion of tourist money goes to pay for teachers, hospitals, doctors, and it enriches their own lives.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here, Craig Stanford, and for alerting us to the almost extinction of our closest relatives in the animal kingdom.
Thank you very much, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Craig Stanford, a well-known authority on the behavior of primates and other animals and on the biological and cultural roots of human behavior. He's a professor of anthropology and biological sciences at USC and director of the USC Jane Goodall Research Center. And he's the author of the new book, Planet Without Apes. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about a new book that exposes the power and corruption of Big Pharma, Blood Medicine, the man who blew the whistle on one of the deadliest prescription drugs ever. Thank you.